because they only lasted a few hours before dying. But they were truly beautiful if you caught them in the one night they bloomed. "I know you hate cuttings," Watt was saying, "but I couldn't help it. I've been wanting to get you one of these ever since that night at Bubble Lounge."
"It's beautiful. Thank you," Avery breathed.
The actual bud was tiny, smaller than her fingernail, and was now positively glowing with a soft golden light. She tucked it into her updo behind her ear. It went perfectly with her gown, which was long and slinky and covered in tiny pieces of mirror. She'd loved the delicious irony of it, that when people tried to look at her, they'd be forced to look at themselves instead.
"Is this the famous Watt?"
Avery's mom called out from the entryway.
"Come in! We've heard so much about you."
"I mentioned him once." Avery flushed with embarrassment as she led Watt inside.
"Watt, it's wonderful to finally meet you."
Elizabeth held out a hand, enormous diamond rings glittering on every finger. Watt shook it, undeterred.
"Thank you. You look lovely tonight, Mrs. Fuller."
To Avery's surprise, he winked. Quickly, but with just the right amount of flirtation to make Avery's mom melt a little. How had he known to use that little trick?
"Now tell me,"
Avery's mom asked, a new warmth in her voice.
"Because Avery refuses to, how did you two meet?"
"We ran into each other at an augmented reality game. Of course, after I saw Avery, I couldn't really focus on the game," Watt said. "So I pestered her and sent her flowers until she agreed to go out with me."
"Yes, well, Avery's always been stubborn."
Pearson Fuller strode briskly into the room.
"You must be Watt," he said,
and gave his hand a firm shake.
"Have a seat. Can I get you something? Wine? Scotch?"
"Dad, we're already late." Avery glanced over at Watt, but he seemed to be thoroughly enjoying himself.
"Oh, I think we have time for one drink, don't you?"
he asked mischievously.
"Exactly."
Her dad stepped behind the bar and began sorting through the monogrammed crystal decanters.
"Besides, they might have age scanners at the club. You never know. This could be the only drink you get tonight."
"Not at the university club."
Elizabeth stepped forward, the skirts of her dress giving a little swish as she walked.
"Wine for me, Pearson."
"They're cracking down everywhere these days."
Pearson poured drinks into pre-chilled glasses and passed them around, then settled on the sofa.
"So, Watt, tell me about yourself. Where do you go to school?"
"I go to Jefferson High, actually, on the 240th floor."
Watt said it confidently, unashamed. Avery found herself feeling oddly proud of him. To her relief, her parents just nodded, as if it were normal for boys to come 2 miles upstairs to go on dates with Avery.
"That's a charter school, isn't it?" Pearson asked.
"It is," Watt said,
and Avery shot her dad a curious stare. How did he know that? Her dad nodded.
"I have a few properties in that neighborhood. One's at the corner of 17th and Freedmore, the building with the bank inside."
Avery stifled a groan and met Watt's eyes, but he just grinned at her and took a sip of his scotch. Up in her hair, the incandescent glowed like a living light bulb. Avery linked her arm in Watt's as they stood at the entrance to the University Club ballroom. The massive, dark wood room was decorated all in tones of blue and silver. Even the columns seemed to be entirely covered by a blue and white profusion of flowers. Curving bars dotted the corners of the room, and along the far wall, a dance floor had been set up. The room was dim, but Avery could still see the vibrant colors of all the dresses, which seemed even richer alongside the stark black of the tuxedos.
"You're terrible," she hissed at Watt,
and led him forward into the crowd.
"It's not my fault your parents like me,"
he replied innocently, and Avery couldn't help smiling at that. He held out a hand.
"Want to dance?"
"Yes," she said eagerly, wondering how Watt could tell what she'd been thinking. It was still a little early to be on the dance floor. But Avery had always preferred dancing to socializing at these things.
People tended to flock around her, bombard her with small talk, shoot glances at her from across the room. Even now she could see them studying her dress, whispering to one another about the new boy she'd brought. The dance floor was the only place she ever got any peace. As they moved through the crowds, Avery saw that pretty much everyone was here. There was Risha, standing with Ming at the bar, and Jess with her boyfriend, Patrick, and her parents' friends, the McClendons, who gave her a little wave. She knew why Eris was missing, but where was Cord? He and Bryce were actually members in their own right, even though they were technically too young. The club had bent the rules for them since their parents were so beloved, but Avery didn't see either of the Anderton boys around. She'd been sort of hoping Cord would show, just so she could find out what girl he'd broken up with Eris for. They stepped onto the dance floor, and Watt reached for her arms to give her a perfect spin. He moved lightly and easily on his feet. "You're a great dancer," Avery said over the music, and felt immediately guilty for sounding so surprised.
"I had those shoes when we were younger. You know, the ones that danced on their own, pulling you along for the ride?"
She snorted inelegantly at the image.
"That sounds dangerous. I would definitely fall."
"I did, hundreds of times. But eventually I started dancing like this."
Watt spun her again, then dipped her low over one arm. He pulled Avery back up and the band began to slow, the lead female singer crooning one of Avery's favorite old love ballads. She started to lead Watt deeper onto the dance floor just as he took a reflexive step back.
"Please, I love this song, especially when it's sung live," she said, trying not to laugh at his dismay. It was so rare to hear live bands anymore, so few chances to listen to things like this.
Watt obediently stepped closer, seeming to hesitate before sliding a hand around her waist. He caught her other hand in his, swaying gently.
"You really like old things, don't you?" he asked, his eyes on hers.
"What do you mean?"
Avery looked at him.
"The way you talked about the song just now, or what you said in Redwood Park, or how you talk about Florence. You're so nostalgic.
Why do you like ancient stuff so much?"
Avery was surprised at the insight. "You think it's useless, don't you?"
"Not at all. I'm just used to only thinking about the future."
"And what does the future look like to you?" She was curious.
"Faster. More convenient and connected, and safer, hopefully."
Avery blinked.
"Sorry," Watt said ruefully, looking almost embarrassed. "I do a lot of tech stuff in my spare time. I'm trying to get into MIT's microsystems engineering program."
Avery didn't even know what microsystems engineering was.
"Does that mean you can fix my tablet whenever it freezes?"
Watt seemed like he might laugh, and Avery found that she didn't mind, that she wanted to join in.
"Yeah, I could definitely do that," he told her.
A light danced in his eyes. Avery let them drift closer to the band. People were forming a space around them, giving Avery a nearly imperceptible bubble, like always.
"You're right," she said, thinking aloud. "I do love the romance that everything had back when there were more obstacles in the world. Like, listen to this song." She sighed. "It's about being in love even when you never get to see the person because you're 1,000 miles apart. No one would write anything like this now, because our lives are so automated and easy. Which I guess is thanks to people like you," she added, teasing.
"Hey," Watt said in mock protest. "Don't you like always getting everything you want?"
Avery looked down, suddenly sad.
"I don't get everything," she murmured.
The song ended and the crowds began shifting, giving her a direct view of Leda and Atlas. They were sitting together in a pair of chairs near the dance floor, their heads bent close. Avery watched, powerless to look away, as Leda whispered something in Atlas's ear. He looked incredible in his new tux, Avery thought, remembering the first time he'd gone for a fitting when he insisted she come help. Leda looked beautiful tonight, too, in a new strapless cobalt gown. They looked happy together, Avery admitted grudgingly.
They looked right. Watt's eyes were on her. Avery couldn't bear it. She knew her emotions must be written there on her face, plain as day. She hooked her arm around his neck and pulled him closer, tilting her head to rest it on his shoulder. She felt him catch his breath, felt his heartbeat pulsing through the tux she'd made him buy. She could never, ever be with Atlas the way Alita was, together, holding hands, in public. It was a helpless, hopeless dream. She knew she had to give up on it, on him. But it still hurt.
"I don't think I've told you enough how beautiful you look tonight," Watt murmured. His breath was warm on her ear.
She shivered and tilted her head back to meet his gaze. "You don't look so bad yourself, you know."
"I clean up okay with proper help," Watt said softly. "I'm really glad I got to come with you tonight, Avery."
The sincerity in his tone gave her pause.
"Me too," she said, meaning it. She was glad she'd invited Watt. He was way better than the string of fake dates she'd previously brought to stuff like this. In fact, this wasn't really feeling like a fake date at all. She let go of Watt's hand and reached up to lace her fingers behind his neck. He was so close she could count each eyelash framing his deep brown eyes. Her eyes traveled to his lips, and she wondered, suddenly, what it would be like to kiss him. She hadn't thought it was possible, but maybe, eventually, she could fall for someone who wasn't Atlas. Avery closed her eyes and swayed to the music, next to Watt, letting that be enough for now.
Lita walked through the party with Atlas, flashing smiles at everyone she saw, in a gloriously expansive mood. Tonight was going even better than she'd hoped. Technically, this was only her and Atlas's first date, but it felt like more. A proclamation, almost. Everyone here, from their friends to the photographer, was treating them like an official couple. Already their parents were seated at the same table, smiling and shooting obvious glances at them. Lita had never felt so beautiful as when she stepped into the room on Atlas's arm, smiling ear to ear. All eyes had seemed to turn to her. "Avery must feel this way every single day," she thought wonderingly. It was perfect. Everything she'd ever wanted since she'd moved up here 4 years ago. Best of all, there was no sign of the mysterious glow makeup girl. If she'd ever even existed, which Lita was starting to doubt. Nadia still hadn't found a shred of evidence that Atlas was with anyone but Lita that night or any other. Maybe the makeup had smeared on his shirt some other way. Maybe he really hadn't kissed anyone else. Besides, based on the way the night was going, Lita was starting to hope that she and Atlas would finally go home together. It was all she'd been able to think of in the hover on the way here. She'd registered Atlas making conversation, had somehow managed to answer his questions, but her mind kept tracing over his body on the cushions next to her. Every time he shifted his weight, Lita felt the movement reverberate through her. It was torture having him so achingly close. Now, on the dance floor, she was finding every excuse she could to touch him. She pulled him close, her hand tracing small circles on his back through his tux jacket. She couldn't wait to take it off him later.
"What's going on with you and Avery?"
"What?"
Surely Lita had misheard. She'd been distracted by the direction of her thoughts.
"I asked, what's going on with you and Avery?" Atlas repeated.
He'd moved to sit in a chair at the edge of the dance floor, and Lita wordlessly sank down next to him.
"It's fine," she said automatically, annoyed that even when Avery wasn't around, everything inevitably came back to her. "Why wouldn't it be?"
"Sorry, I didn't mean to bring up a sensitive subject. I just noticed that you two haven't spent much time together lately, and I wanted to make sure..."
He sighed.
"Normally I'd ask Avery about it, but we're not exactly on great terms right now."
That made Lita sit up a little straighter. Had Avery and Atlas fought about her? Maybe Avery had said something to Atlas, told him that Lita wasn't good enough for him, and Atlas had stood up for her. Lita didn't want to believe it of her best friend. But was Avery even her best friend anymore? Thank you for asking. I don't really want to talk about it, though. I'm sorry. Forget I said anything. Atlas sounded genuinely regretful. Want to dance? Lita nodded gratefully, and he swept her back onto the dance floor. Is it weird, being back? She asked after a while. Kind of, Atlas admitted. The tower is just so different from everywhere else, you know? Well, it certainly is different from the Amazon, Lita said without thinking. Atlas's feet were suddenly rooted in place. How did you know about the Amazon? He asked very slowly. Shit. You mentioned it, I think, she told him, wishing she could unspeak the words. I'm sure I didn't, he corrected her. Well, Avery then, or your parents, I don't know, I heard it somewhere, she said offhandedly. But Atlas wasn't so easily fooled. Lita, what's going on with you? His brown eyes narrowed. Nothing, I promise, I'm sorry. Atlas nodded, seeming to let it go, and they kept dancing. But Lita could still see the tightness in his jaw, the tension in his body. She felt it strumming through the space between them. After another song, he took a step back. Want a drink? Yes, Lita agreed, a little too emphatically. She started to follow him, but Atlas shook his head. The bar is so crowded. Let me bring it to you. Champagne, right? Thanks, Lita said helplessly, even though champagne wasn't her drink at all. It was Avery's. She wandered toward the enormous side rooms off the ballroom, wondering where her friends were. But before she saw them, her eyes were drawn to her dad, who was standing alone in a corner. He was folded in on himself, looking like he didn't want to be noticed, and muttering, clearly on a call. Lita's mind went immediately to last weekend, when he'd lied about golf. Before she thought twice about it, she'd logged into lip-read on her contacts and focused intently on her dad's mouth, dozens of meters away. Lip-read was intended as a tool for the hearing impaired, but Lita had discovered that it worked great for spying when you use the new Super Zoom contacts. I can't tell my family yet, a robotic voice translated her dad's words into her ear in a grating monotone. What couldn't he tell them? Lita wondered, the words giving her pause. A moment later. Fine. I'll talk to her next weekend. Lita, dazed at what she'd overheard, watched him end the ping and walk away just as her mom appeared at her shoulder. Lita, you look gorgeous! Ilara exclaimed, as if she hadn't seen her daughter getting ready. Where's Atlas? Bringing us drinks, Lita said shortly. Lita, I'll be good, I promise, she added, still thinking about her dad's behavior. She glanced over her mom's crimson gown and expensive jewelry, realizing that she didn't recognize the bracelet on her wrist. Is that new? She asked, momentarily distracted. Your father just gave it to me for our anniversary. Ilara held out the bracelet, an intricate wrought gold net studded with tiny diamonds for Lita to inspect. That and a Calvador scarf? Wow. Lita had never seen her dad so generous. I didn't get a Calvador, Ilara said, puzzled. What do you mean, hun? There are my two girls. Lita's dad pushed through the crowd to hook his arm through her mom's. They made a striking pair, him so light and her so dark, the red pocket square in his tux mirroring the color of her dress. Lita wondered what his bizarre ping had been about, and what had happened to the scarf. Did he think better of it and return it? It made sense, but still, she couldn't shake the feeling that something bigger was going on. I need to go find Atlas. Lita stepped back, feeling suddenly uneasy, almost panicked. She wanted a drink, now. Lita! See you at home! she called out over her shoulder. When she got to the bar, she shoved shamelessly forward to the front of the line, looking for Atlas. "Excuse me, I'm sorry," she muttered, not really caring who she pushed past. Her need was like an itch crawling desperately over her skin. In some part of her mind, she registered this as a warning flag, but she'd deal with it later when her chest wasn't so tight. At the front of the line stood Avery's date. Watt, if she remembered right. Lita hadn't actually been introduced to him at Eris's party, though she'd seen him there, wandering around after Avery like a lost puppy. And now he was Avery's date to the University Club gala? It seemed impossible that he'd just appeared into their lives out of nowhere, with no backstory and no explanation. "What, right?" she asked, sidling up to him. "You're here with Avery." "You do realize you just cut an entire line of people to get to the front of the bar." "It's fine, they're all friends," Lita said with an airy gesture. Well, it was sort of true. "Who am I to argue with that logic?" Watt replied, his mouth twitching with a barely suppressed smile. Was he laughing at her? "Since you're clearly thirsty, let me buy you a drink."
"It's an open bar!"
Lita snapped in irritation as the white-gloved bartender turned to Watt. She started to tell him that she wanted a
"whiskey soda for the lady, beer for me, and a champagne," Watt said.
When the bartender handed him the drinks, Watt and Lita moved aside to a high-topped table past the crush of people.
"How did you know what I wanted?" Lita asked, a little discomfited.
Whiskey soda wasn't exactly a ladylike drink, but it was the only thing that calmed her when she felt truly agitated.
"Lucky guess," Watt said easily. "But be careful. It only takes one."
She shot him a glance, startled. What the hell did he mean by that? "It only takes one" was what they used to say back at Silver Cove. But Watt was just sipping his beer innocently.
"I'm sorry," she said, in the nicest tone she could muster. "I haven't even introduced myself. I'm Lita Cole."
She held out a hand and Watt shook it, that maddening smirk still on his face.
"I know," he answered.
"Well, that doesn't seem fair," she went on, more flustered than she'd wanted to be. "I don't know anything about you. Tell me about yourself."
"Oh, I'm not very interesting," he said lightly.
"Where do you go to school?"
"Jefferson High."
She frowned, wishing she could look up things like this on her contacts without being obvious about it.
"I don't know it. Are you..."
"It's on the 240th floor,"
he interrupted, leaning on the table, watching her. He wasn't tall, but there was something imposing about his stance. She found herself wishing they were seated.
"I see."
Lita had no idea how to respond. She hadn't talked to anyone from that far down, even back when she was a mile higher.
"And how did you say you met Avery?"
"I didn't say," he winked.
"You seem awfully curious about me. It's because Avery is your best friend, right?" He said it knowingly, and Lita flushed, angry. Had Avery told this guy about their falling out?
"She is," Lita said defensively.
Avery appeared as if on cue. Her hair was swept up in a twist, a few tendrils escaping to frame her face, an incandescent tucked behind one ear like everyone used to do in middle school. It was totally lame, and yet, of course, Avery pulled it off effortlessly.
God, by next week everyone would probably be wearing incandescents again.
Avery moved forward and the light dazzled over her gown, which was high-necked and covered in miniature shards of mirror.
"Of course you picked that,"
Lita thought, with a surprising bitterness. "It's a dress that literally reflects you to yourself ad infinitum."
"Hi!"
Avery stepped close to Watt, only to stiffen once she noticed Lita.
"Oh, hey, Lita. How's your night?"
"Oh, I just messed things up with the guy I like, and my dad's acting weird, and I really miss my best friend. Other than that, it's completely..."
"Fantastic," Lita said, a smile settling over her face like a mask.
Avery nodded. "I saw your mom earlier. She said you guys might go to Greece over Christmas. I had no idea, she added clumsily.
Of course you had no idea. We don't talk anymore.
Yeah, Lita said, suddenly sad. Remember that time we had to be Greece for Model UN? She blurted out, not sure why she was bringing it up. And our homemade baklava made everyone sick? Avery joined in.
That's one way to win. Send everyone else running home, Lita said seriously, and then they both laughed. For a fleeting instant, the world seemed normal again. Until their laughter died down, and they looked at each other across the table, and both seemed to realize that things weren't all right between them at all.
Avery was the first to escape. Can we go dance? She asked, turning to Watt and leaving her still full champagne on the table.
As you wish.
Watt took Avery's hand.
Nice meeting you, Lita.
Bye, Lita, Avery called over her shoulder as she pulled Watt into the crowd.
Yeah, see you,
Lita mumbled, but they were already gone. Lita stayed at the table for a while, downing the whiskey soda and then the champagne Avery had left behind. There was something weird about that Watt guy. She didn't trust him. She wanted to ask Avery about him, but then there was so much she needed to talk about with Avery, and she didn't know how anymore. Lita thought she saw Atlas over by the dance floor, where he'd left her. She should go back and find him. But she turned back toward the bar instead, her small shoulders drawn upward like a knife. First, she would get another drink.
Eris. Eris lay on Mariel's bed, curled idly onto one side. Through half-closed lids, she watched Mariel at her desk, furiously typing away at some assignment. The walls were painted a soft green, covered in Insta-photos of Mariel and her friends, and various photography posters. The sun setting over a jagged mountain range, the moon lit up during an eclipse. Country music played on Mariel's speakers. Eris had never met anyone obsessed with country music except Avery, and she'd long ago written it off as one of those incomprehensible Avery quirks. It was kind of funny that Eris's best friend and the girl she was dating had something so unusual in common.
"Are you almost finished?" Eris asked Mariel, though she didn't really mind. She liked it more than she would have expected, actually, spending time with Mariel in peaceful quiet while Mariel did her homework. She couldn't remember ever lying on someone else's bed and just hanging out without any expectations at all.
"Almost," Mariel said, her brow furrowed in concentration.
"Where are you?" Caroline flickered.
"I'm at Mariel's," Eris said aloud, composing a reply. Caroline had met Mariel and knew that she and Eris were spending time together lately.
"My mom," she added in explanation, since Mariel had heard the message.
Mariel nodded.
"Seems like things are getting better between you two," she pointed out.
It was true. After their lunch with Lita's dad, after Eris learned that he was her dad, too, she and her mom had fallen into a sort of truce. They'd started hanging out again, the way they used to, wandering through their favorite upper-floor haunts, even having dinner together most nights. It was nice, no longer feeling so resentful toward her mom.
"Have you heard anything else from your birth dad?" Mariel asked. "When will you see him again?"
"I don't know," Eris told her. They hadn't made any plans to meet up again, hadn't discussed what kind of support, if any, Mr. Cole would give them. She'd mentioned it to her mom earlier, but Caroline had said not to worry. It was being taken care of. What did that mean? Eris wondered, crazily, if she and her mom would move upstairs and start being one big family with the Coles.
"Well, I'm sure he'll reach out," Mariel said, with more confidence than Eris felt.
"It's probably just as weird and new for him as it is for you."
"Thanks," Eris said, glad she'd decided to tell Mariel the whole story. She'd come and spilled everything to Mariel the afternoon that it happened, partly because she needed to share the news with someone and couldn't talk to anyone from the upper floors since they all knew Lita. But mainly she told Mariel simply because she wanted the other girl to know and was interested in her opinion. Eris didn't know anyone else who approached life the way Mariel did,
who thought the way Mariel did.
"Let's not talk about me anymore," Eris said, suddenly eager for a distraction.
"I want to talk about you."
"But I so enjoy always talking about you," Mariel quipped. Eris sat up and glared at her, and Mariel laughed.
"Sorry," she said, though she didn't sound sorry at all. "What do you want to talk about?"
"I know I'm endlessly fascinating," Eris said dryly, "but seriously, we met, what, a month ago? And there's still so much I don't know about you."
"Has it really been a month?"
Eris tossed a pillow at Mariel, who ducked.
"Fine, fine. What do you want to know?"
"Favorite color," Eris said automatically.
"What a typical Eris question," Mariel replied.
But before Eris could throw another pillow, she answered, "Green! Mint green, actually."
"Favorite class in school?"
"That's easy. Debate."
"Really?"
Eris couldn't help asking.
All the debate kids she knew were so awful, with their obnoxious uniform vests and know-it-all attitudes. Mariel seemed way too cool to be one of them.
"If you're that surprised, clearly I haven't argued with you enough," Mariel teased.
"Feel free to try," Eris smiled.
"What do you want to do someday?"
"Beyond the Hollows."
"Me too!"
Mariel laughed again. She'd spun her chair around to face Eris and pulled her feet up to cross them. One of her socks was pink, with white polka dots, the other dotted with tiny orange pumpkins.
"I don't think we'd have the same Hollows career," she said, her eyes dancing.
"I want to be a political commentator."
"Those people who read the news?"
"The ones who lead presidential debates and talk about the issues and write articles for the news feeds."
Mariel looked down, pulling at the sleeves of her sweater.
"I just want to help people understand what's going on. Help them decide their opinions."
"Why don't you run for office, and then you won't just be helping people think, but actually doing stuff?" Eris suggested.
She scooted toward the edge of the bed, close enough to touch Mariel's arm.
"Maybe," Mariel said, but she sounded as though she didn't really believe it.
"One more question," she added, looking back at Eris.
Eris tilted her head, weighing her thoughts. She didn't know anything about Mariel's romantic history. She didn't even know whether she dated guys as well as girls.
"Have you ever been in love?" she decided.
"No," Mariel said quickly. Too quickly, Eris thought. She wondered who Mariel had loved and was surprised to feel a pang of disappointment or maybe jealousy.
"Have you?"
Mariel pressed.
"No, I mean, me neither."
The song switched to a fast, upbeat country track, a girl's voice crooning about how she was going to get revenge on someone who'd cheated on her. Mariel turned quietly back to her assignment, and Eris pulled out her tablet, flipping idly through the feeds, her heart pounding, though she wasn't sure why. The University Club Fall Gala was going on right now, miles above their heads. Avery had offered to bring her as a guest, but Eris had declined. She wasn't sure she wanted to face the stairs or the chance of seeing her dad. That is, the man she'd thought was her dad.
Either dad, she mentally corrected, because Mr. Cole would of course be there too.
Still, as the minutes ticked by and Eris flipped through photo after photo of her friends all dressed up and having an amazing time, she began to regret telling Avery no. Her mind drifted to what she'd be wearing right now if she were there. Maybe her blush-colored gown with the scalloped hem, or something silver. Hadn't that been the theme of the party this year? She pulled up the invitation on her contacts. "The University Club invites you to an evening under the stars," it read in elaborate cursive, with animated stars falling in bursts around the corners of her vision. "There was a comet tonight," she remembered suddenly.
"Done,"
Mariel said, clicking to turn in her assignment.
"What do you want to do tonight?"
"Get your coat," Eris grinned. "We're going on an adventure."
"I'm confused," Mariel said as they walked along Jersey Highway at 35th Street.
The solar-charged lamps cast interlocking rings of golden light on the sidewalk. Up ahead, Eris could see the hulking form of the Intrepid Naval Museum, an enormous old ship anchored to the Hudson's floor. They'd gone on a field trip there in third grade. She still remembered how Cord had tried to dare her and Avery to jump off the side to see whether the water would give them mermaid gills. Cord. She hadn't really thought about him in weeks, had she? All your questions are about to be answered, I promise. Eris stepped up to a gate marked Pier 30, Employees Only. She entered the code she'd paid for online, and the door swung open. They stepped out onto a wooden dock, with rows of corrugated iron doors on either side. Water lapped softly under their feet. Eris couldn't stop smiling. She loved the sensation, the delicious thrill of setting out on a wild quest for something you may or may not find, all the while knowing that whatever happened, the night itself would certainly be wonderful. She punched the same code into one of the doors, which retracted up into the roof overhead, revealing a small space filled almost entirely by a four-person hoverboat. Its shape reminded Eris of the top of a mushroom, propeller jets peeking out from under the sleek white hull. The only decoration was a peeling American flag decal. "Put this on," she said, tossing Mariel a silver inflato belt. "Whose boat is this?" Mariel stepped onto the tiny enclosed dock, snapping the belt around her waist. Eris pushed a button, and the hoverboat began to lower onto the water. "We're borrowing it," she said simply. The after-hours rental she'd paid for was, she felt pretty certain, illegal. The lights around the boat turned the water in the slip a brackish green. Eris kicked off her shoes before grabbing Mariel's hand and pulling her inside, onto the white vinyl seats that circled the interior of the boat. "Do you know how to drive this thing?" Mariel asked, watching her. She seemed torn between skepticism and enthusiasm. "It has autopilot. At least that's what I was told." Eris grinned and pushed the start button, and the hoverboat took off into the night. They skimmed across the surface of the water, which was as dark and impenetrable as the surface of a black mirror. Eris's hair whipped around in a reckless tangle. Spray flung up into her face. The sting of it felt shockingly good. Across the river in New Jersey, scattered lights twinkled warmly. Mariel was looking out over the water, watching their progress. There was something almost regal in the shadowed line of her profile, her long nose and high brow. Then she turned and winked at Eris, and the illusion was broken. "Where are you taking us, O intrepid captain?" Mariel raised her voice over the sound of the wind in the motor. "Somewhere we can see around that." Eris pointed back at the tower, which stretched impossibly high into the darkness. They passed the shrouded form of the Statue of Liberty, heading south around the seaports, where Eris could hear the sounds of music and raucous laughter. Finally, when they were far enough away that the tower no longer filled the whole sky, Eris killed the motor. She leaned over the side to trail her fingers in the water and pulled them quickly back. It was bitter cold. "I love this. It's an amazing surprise," Mariel said in the sudden quiet. "This isn't the surprise," Eris said. "At least, not all of it." The cheers from South Street were getting louder. Eris could hear music playing and saw the pink dancing lights of hallucilighters across the water. "Is there some kind of rave going on tonight?" Mariel asked. Eris laughed. "They're all here for the same reason we are," she said, and drew her arm around Mariel. "Look." She pointed up, and they both tipped their faces to the stars. A comet sliced through the velvet dark sky, its tail streaming after it like a fan. "It's beautiful," Mariel breathed. Eris drank in the sight, trying not to think about the university club, how Avery and Lita were probably pressed up against the windows this very moment, wearing expensive gowns and holding champagne flutes as the comet blazed past. "Stop it," she told herself. This was so much better. "It's almost named after me, you know," she said, recalling what she'd read earlier. "Eros, instead of Eris. Supposedly it won't pass Earth again for 1,000 years. "The god of love," Mariel laughed.
Eris, on the other hand, is the goddess of... chaos, Eris said ruefully. She'd always teased her mom about that. Caroline claimed she hadn't known, that she'd picked the name because she thought it was pretty. Sometimes love and chaos are the same thing, Mariel said softly. Eris turned around and kissed her in reply, blocking the comet from her view. Mariel responded eagerly, slipping her arms around Eris's shoulders. There was something new in the kiss, a tenderness Eris wasn't familiar with. Eventually, Mariel pulled back. Eris, I'm afraid. What? Why? The comet had faded from the sky. Downtown, they could hear the screams of revelers toasting its arrival. Eros, the love comet. Mariel seemed about to say something. Eris could feel nervousness crackling across the surface of her skin like electricity. I don't want to get hurt. Eris felt for some reason that hadn't been what Mariel originally meant to say. But she just leaned in, resting her head lightly on Mariel's shoulder. I'll never do anything to hurt you. I promise, she said softly. The cynical, worldly part of Eris laughed at herself for saying that, for making a promise she could never hope to keep. Well, she would just have to keep it this time, she thought firmly. She felt Mariel relax a little next to her. Their boat rocked back and forth, gently buffeted by the waves. I promise, Eris said again, and the words drifted up like smoke into the darkness. Avery. Thanks for the ride home, Avery said when the hover pulled up to her apartment. Her parents had left the party hours ago, and she wasn't sure where any of her friends were by now, not even Lita or Atlas. She'd been too distracted by the dancing, the laughing, the swirl of coordinated excitement surrounding the comet. And by Watt. She'd had fun with him tonight, far more fun than she'd expected to. He was somehow earnest without being serious, confident without being an asshole. As he walked her to the front door, Avery realized that Watt would have to go almost 800 floors down tower after dropping her off. She tried to picture his home life and drew a blank. Why hadn't she asked more questions about him, she thought, a little embarrassed at how self-centered he must think she was. Of course. Watt reached gingerly behind her ear for the incandescent. It was dried and brown now, its fragrance cloyingly sweet. Just hours ago it had been a living star. I guess the night's really over, isn't it? She remarked wistfully. Watt made a move to throw the flower away, but she stopped him. No, don't. Not yet. I want to keep it, just for a little while. He obediently held out the incandescent, his eyes on her, thoughtful. Avery reached for the dead blossom and held it tight in her palm. She felt like she could hear Watt's heartbeat echoing across the space between them. Ever so lightly, Watt leaned down to place his lips on her forehead. He paused, giving Avery time to pull away. She didn't, but she didn't lean in either. She just stood still and waited. By the time he was brushing his lips to hers, the kiss felt inevitable. Avery kissed him back without thinking, eager to see what Watt felt like, tasted like. The kiss was soft and slow, and she loved how warm his hands were on her hips. When they finally broke apart, neither of them spoke. Avery felt a strange, aching happiness. She'd finally done it, kissed someone who wasn't Atlas. For real this time, not someone she was half-heartedly avoiding, not a sloppy make-out at a holiday party, but someone she might actually like. It felt like sacrilege, and yet it hadn't been that hard at all. Maybe this was what she needed, she thought, to help her get over Atlas once and for all. Maybe Watt was what she needed. Good night, Avery, he said, turning back toward the hover. The feelings swirling uncertainly around Avery's mind coalesced into a single word. Wait. Watt stopped, the door halfway shut. Avery's heart was beating too fast, her breathing uneven. She wondered if Atlas was home and would see them together. Stop thinking of Atlas. She didn't want Watt to leave, and yet she wasn't sure she was ready for this. But maybe she never would be. I was thinking... She bit her lip. Watt stood there patiently, watching her watch him. And Avery realized her decision was made. Do you want to come in? Watt. At first, Watt wasn't sure he'd heard correctly.
Yeah, I mean, I'd love to, he told Avery, trying not to sound too eager.
He let the hover drive off as she took his hand and led him inside, through the imposing mirrored entryway that opened onto their vast, two-storied living room. He half expected to go toward the couch, but instead Avery turned immediately to the right, down a carpeted hallway. Were they really going where he thought they were going? He wondered. He wasn't used to doing this stuff without Nadia's help.
This is my room, Avery murmured, pushing open the door. Watt was dimly aware of an ornate bedroom with a massive four-poster bed, everything decorated in soft blue and cream, antique prints and heavy-framed mirrors spaced evenly on the walls. But he couldn't focus on anything but Avery. He hesitated, his mind whirling, wondering if he should make the first move or if that would be too forward. And then Avery leaned in and kissed him, and he was done thinking. They fell backward onto the bed in a wild tangle. Watt wasn't being careful with his kisses anymore. Avery began impatiently unbuttoning his dress shirt, yanking the straps of his suspenders down over his shoulders, and then her hands were on the plane of his chest and she was pushing him back against her pillows, her kisses insistent, almost frantic. In whatever part of his mind was still functioning, Watt wanted to shout some primal victory cry. He couldn't quite believe it. He was in Avery Fuller's bedroom, on Avery Fuller's bed, kissing Avery Fuller, the most beautiful, most incredible, most intriguing girl in the entire world. And of all the infinite guys she could have, she had somehow picked him. He slipped his hands around to the zipper at the back of her dress. Avery made a sound deep in her throat. Mistaking her meaning, Watt tugged it all the way down, and Avery pulled back as if scalded. He blinked, dazed.
"I'm sorry, we can slow down," he said thickly.
"No, it's not. I just..." Avery took a deep, rattling breath. "I can't do this." She sounded close to tears.
Watt sat up and raked a hand through his hair.
"I promise, nothing you don't want to do."
He searched for his shirt and threw it back on, feeling guilty.
"It's not that..." She trailed off, biting her lip.
"I think you should go," she said, and there was a finality in her voice that scared Watt more than anything she'd said.
"Okay, but why?"
he couldn't help asking.
Avery didn't say anything, didn't even look at him.
He was reminded suddenly of Eris's birthday party, how they'd been talking, even flirting. Then, in a bewildering instant, Avery had gone pale and dumped him on Ming. And what about that weird, wistful comment she made tonight, about not always getting everything she wanted? Even without Nadia, Watt's mind was capable of putting together the pieces.
"Is it someone else?"
He knew it was an asshole thing to ask, but he wanted to know. Avery just looked at him in apparent distress.
"Never mind. Forget it,"
Watt said, hating how bitter he sounded. Without another word, he turned and walked out of Avery's room, out of her apartment, and maybe out of her life for good.
Lita. Lita slid into the hover alongside Atlas. It was later than she'd realized, and she'd drunk more than she'd meant to. All the uncertainty in her life was throwing her off. But it didn't matter. She and Atlas were here, together, alone at last. She scooted closer to him, too drunk to worry anymore, and looked up at him through her lashes. She was sick of waiting. She wanted him so acutely she couldn't think straight. The hover reached her house, and Lita started to kiss him.
Lita. Atlas pulled back, circling her wrists with his hands and lowering them to her lap.
You should come inside, she persisted.
Atlas shook his head.
We need to talk.
Those four words sent a cold finger of dread down her nerves, already buzzing and on edge with the alcohol.
So talk,
she said bluntly.
I had a lot of fun with you at the gala,
Atlas began awkwardly.
You looked beautiful tonight, you know. But,
he went on, and in that but she saw all her heartbreak.
I don't think we should go out again.
You don't want to at least sleep with me before you run off this time?
Atlas flinched.
I'm sorry. What happened in Katyan, I should have stopped before it went so far.
If it was such a mistake, then why did you ask me out again tonight?
Because you're incredible. Any guy would be lucky to go out with you.
Atlas looked straight into her eyes.
You deserve better than me. You deserve the truth. And the truth is, I have feelings for someone else. It wouldn't be fair to you, letting things go on when I feel this way.
All right, then.
Atlas started to come around to open the door for her, but she stepped out and slammed it shut before he had the chance.
I'm sorry, Lita. I hope we can stay friends, he said.
She just carefully climbed up her steps, letting him see how unaffected she was, stubbornness and wounded pride keeping her head aloft. She wondered what he would say if he knew that the last time he'd pulled something like this, she'd gone on a wild tail-spinning bender that ended in 2 months of rehab. She should have known better. She should have known that Atlas would play boomerang with her emotions again, ask her out to big public events, and then tell her stiffly that he wanted to be fair. I'll show you fair, she thought, walking in her front door without turning her head even a fraction of a degree back in his direction. But the moment she was safely in her room, Lita crumpled to the floor, cradling her head in her hands. A terrifying part of her hated Atlas for the way he treated her. She wanted to hurt him. Him and whatever stupid girl he supposedly had feelings for. Lita realized with a start that she still hadn't used the best weapon in her arsenal. She started mumbling, composing a message to Nadia. You were wrong. Atlas just told me that he's in love with someone else. Figure out who it is, or you're fired. A moment later, a response she didn't expect flashed across her vision. Too late. I quit. Her blood boiled.
No one quits on me. You can't quit, not now.
And you wanted to fire me. It sure is hard to keep up with your mood swings.
You little...
Sorry, but I'm done with all of you.
Nadia interrupted, and then the link was broken as Nadia blocked her permanently. Lita didn't know what the hacker meant by all of you, and she didn't particularly care. She felt blindsided. Everything was pressing in on her. Losing her best friend, then Atlas, and now Nadia on top of everything else. God, she just wanted to talk to someone. Not to mention all the weirdness lately about her dad. Lita felt cornered, panicked. She wanted to lash out. Think, she told herself, but her thoughts weren't coming. She closed her eyes and took a deep, shuddering breath. She couldn't take it anymore. She pulled up the unsent flicker to Ross, still waiting there in her drafts box, and sent it under her breath.
It's me. What have you got?
Avery. Avery sighed as she pulled her feet up onto the soft gray couch in the living room. She waved half-heartedly, the gesture scrolling through the thousands of channels on the hollow screen. But all she could think about was Watt, and the look on his face when she'd kicked him out of her room. Avery felt terrible about how she'd ended the night. She really hadn't meant to lead Watt on. The moment he turned up on her doorstep, looking so magnificent in his tux, she'd felt a little thrill of excitement. And that feeling had only grown as the night wore on. Maybe it was the way he tried to talk to her, really talk to her, and paid attention to things that mattered to her. Maybe it was the warm, clean scent of him when she leaned her cheek on his shoulder on the dance floor,
Or maybe it was just that something in Avery's life would have to change drastically if she had any hope of getting over Atlas. And this was the most drastic change she could think of. Whatever the reason, standing there at the end of the night, she decided to follow Jess's advice. To do it and get it over with. She was going to have sex with Watt. Yet when the moment came, Avery froze up completely. She liked Watt, she really did, and still she couldn't do it. She knew it was messed up, but she'd always imagined that moment with Atlas. No matter how hard she tried to convince herself, she couldn't bear the thought of being with anyone else. She thought of what Watt had said earlier, about how she was always looking backward while he looked forward. She wondered, suddenly, if part of why she was so interested in the past was because it was easier than thinking of the future, of her future. Because a future with Atlas was impossible, and yet a future without him would be unbearable. Avery glanced at her messages again. Still nothing from Watt. She'd sent him a brief flicker saying she was sorry for the way things ended, and she hoped he got home okay, but she hadn't heard back. If only she could talk this out with Lita. But she had no idea if Lita and Atlas were still at the gala, or at Lita's place. Avery swiped at the holo channels again, trying desperately not to think about Lita and Atlas. Better to focus on the lesser hurt, of how royally she'd screwed things up with Watt. She heard the telltale beep of the front door and sat up, startled, tucking her stray wisps of hair behind her ears. Her parents had come home hours ago and were sleeping in their master at the far end of the hall. It had to be Atlas. Avery? He stood in the doorway. I didn't realize you were home. You're back, she pointed out, stupidly. Yeah. He settled on the couch next to her. I thought you were with Lita, Avery couldn't help saying. I was, but I dropped her off. He paused. I told Lita we shouldn't go out again. Oh! Avery felt a surge of triumph at the news and hated herself for it, for rejoicing in her friend's suffering. Part of her knew that if it weren't Atlas, Lita would be calling her right now, to vent about the whole thing and scheme some Lita-esque revenge. They sat there for a moment, both of them staring straight ahead at the hollow screen, where a commercial for a new dragon fruit snack pack was playing. Animated dragons flew around the screen in circles, batting their long eyelashes. Atlas turned to her. So what's the deal with you and that Watt guy? What do you mean? What do you see in him, anyway? You said last week that you thought he was nice, Avery snapped. Atlas didn't answer. Not that it's any of your business, she went on testily. But we're over. Guess it's a night for breakups. Happy now? Atlas met her gaze, those deep brown eyes unblinking. Aves, I only care if you're happy. She felt her anger deflate. The thing is, she said haltingly, you were right. Watt is a nice guy. It's not his fault, he's not... She couldn't afford to finish that thought. Not what? Atlas prompted. Avery was tired, so tired, of acting like the sight of Atlas with other girls didn't bother her, of hiding her hurt behind a smile. The pretense weighed on her so heavily she felt she might snap in two. Yet she hesitated. If she said it, if she told Atlas what she really wanted to, she risked losing him forever. Not you, she whispered at last. The words hung there, quietly ending the world Avery had always lived in. In the silence, a new world was unfolding. Avery held her breath. And then, suddenly, Atlas's arms were around her, his lips on hers. Avery responded eagerly, recklessly, her heart almost hurting with joy. Their kisses were frantic and feverish, and she would never get enough of them. At some point, Atlas swung her up into his arms and started down the hall to his room. Avery's head was pressed against his chest, and she could hear the erratic beat of his heart, its pulse matching her own. She felt it, too, the exhilaration,
and underneath it the thin, electrifying undercurrent of fear at the forbiddenness of what they were about to do. She shivered. A crash sounded. She realized Atlas had knocked over the lamp by his bed. They both froze, hardly daring to breathe. Their parents were still home.